This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstand Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the wake-up call.
Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel.
My name's Pete Ronayne, sitting in for the vacationing Rick Moore. He's making his pilgrimage to Las Vegas.
It's a new day, it's a new life for me. And I'm feeling good.
And that's a great indicator that spring has sprung when Rick is making his Vegas pilgrimage, when March Madness is well underway. Props to George Mason. We got spring training, and if you're a baseball fan, the Nationals will be playing the Orioles this year. The Masters Golf Tournament is just over 2 weeks away. It's getting green out there. Got the daffodils, the tulips, lots of buds, lots of blooms, which certainly lends itself very naturally to a discussion of some local produce, if you will. Local agriculture, viticulture more specifically. So we're going to talk Virginia wine today, which I've really been looking forward to this topic. It's probably something long overdue as a topic for the wake-up call. And as a result, it's my pleasure to welcome into the station this morning Tim Gorman from Cardinal Point Vineyard. Tim, good morning.
Morning, Pete. How are you doing?
We're doing very well. I want to thank you for coming in, and actually thank you guys for your support of the station as well over a long period of time.
It's our pleasure.
So we've got a great outline to talk about this morning, folks, and any questions along the way, regardless of whether our specific topic is what you want us to be on. If you want to take us in a different direction, 979-0919. If you're further out in the listening area, 1-877-967-6762. Tim Gorman from Cardinal Point, we're going to talk about that vineyard specifically, but then we're going to broaden it and open it up to talk about Virginia wine, how it's evolved and gotten to where it is, some of the strengths and challenges, the future, and a lot of other issues swirling around. And we'll even have a chance to talk about some wine enjoyment, I think, and what's new for wine in this area, nationwide, around the world, etc. So, Tim, to get things started, let's talk a little bit about Cardinal Point, where you guys are located, and a little just a, sort of the mini history and background of Cardinal Point Vineyard. And we'll start with you guys are out in Afton.
Right. Yeah, we're west of Charlottesville in Afton. If you take 250 out, like you're going to Wintergreen, as you head down south on 151, you'll pass signs for three wineries, and we're one of the three out there in Afton.
So the Nelson County triangle out there, so the Golden Wine Triangle.
It's true. Nelson County's quite the grape-growing, or at least winery area of Virginia. We've got there's seven wineries in our county, and now there'll be an eighth one pretty soon.
Wow, that's pretty good. Now, for you individually, how and why did you get into this? What's that bio?
That's simple nepotism. I'll try to be quick with it, but it's kind of I don't think there's a usual story for how somebody gets into this business. Mm-hmm. In my case, my dad was in the military, and we lived all over the place, but I'm pretty sure he always wanted to retire and have a farm. One of the places we moved to was Germany in the late 70s, and we were in this little town called Bad Kreuznach, which is literally surrounded by vineyards in this valley. And he fell into the wine scene there and really liked it. And soon after that, we were transferred to Northern Virginia. And this was 79. And it wasn't the most thrilling assignment after being in Germany, but my dad found out that there was local wine being produced at the time.
Even back then?
In 79, I think there were six wineries.
Wow. I think that probably surprised most listeners who would think it's a much more recent phenomenon.
I think like most things, it started very small and very slow, and now there's 107 wineries in the state. So in fact, it's been a pretty quick growth for an industry to get to this size. anyway, we visited, I can remember going with them. I mean, I'm in high school and being dragged along to these wineries and, you know, I couldn't.
Seem like the hippest way to spend your high school days in 1980, you know.
And of course I couldn't drink then. And anyway, so he said, okay, it can be done. My brother and sister went to the university here. I started at JMU in 82, mm-hmm. and the time for my dad to retire came up, and they found some land in between JMU and UVA, and it was out there in Nelson County where mm-hmm. we are right now. You know, paid an exorbitant amount, $1,000 an acre. to get this. I can remember pulling up the first time to this farm and just being like, oh my God, what did they do?
Middle of nowhere.
Yeah, you know, I was going to be a city kid.
But they had in their mind that this was land suitable for growing grapes.
Absolutely, absolutely. This is, all the props should go to my parents for this vision, because they picked actually a really good site. I'll talk about it later, but, you know, site selection's everything mm-hmm. in wine, and particularly getting a good commercially viable fruit to sure. To market. So to kind of speed things up, after in 86, on my spring break, I helped my dad plant grapes instead of going to Florida with my friends, and it was fun.
we'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I worked for a year in Richmond after graduating, and my brother, who by now had received his degree in architecture from UVA, was renovating my parents' farmhouse, and he said, well, why don't you come, you know, help me do that? And my parents said, you can tend the vines, and that was in the summer of 87, and basically I didn't leave after yeah. that. And I did go back to Virginia Tech. I have a degree in fruit science from, it's in horticulture, fruit science. From Tech, and that was in the early 90s. We were just a commercial producing, a producing vineyard for other wineries. I would sell fruit. I sold it all over the state to mm-hmm. the new wineries coming up.
How common is that, just as an issue? I mean, I don't know if you'd have a percentage, but, you know, you go to an area vineyard and you taste some of their wine. Mm-hmm. Most of them, is it sort of, you know, estate grown or, you know?
I don't think I can speak for individual wineries, but I can give you some numbers. There are for each bonded winery, there's another two commercial producers out there selling to wineries. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, some of them may be buying a lot more than others.
Right.
Personally, last year I purchased about 35% of my grapes from these commercial producers. That is, I didn't grow it myself. I
sure.
bought it in. As a farm winery, you really need to need to have at least 50% that you're growing yourself. It's actually 51%, I believe. And
that's like a legal requirement, kind of.
That's a legal requirement, and there's lots of legal requirements. So, you know, it's a great industry if you like legalities and things like that.
We're going to get into some of those
yeah.
issues too.
Exactly.
That's definitely going to come.
Exactly. But so
you got into it. I mean, from being the reluctant high school student to, mm-hmm. I mean, this is what you do now.
This is what I do. Yeah. I mean,
and obviously doing it well. You guys are succeeding. And
well, I think so. We as a grower, I did become I became president of the Virginia Vineyards Association, which represents all the growers. And the joke in that job is when you become president, the only way to get out of being president is to open a winery, because they wouldn't let anybody who owned a winery be president. So that spurred me into into going into the wine business. But we love it. It's very family run, our winery. My sister and I are there daily. She is the business manager, marketing genius, and mm-hmm. I'm the guy that's, you know, painting.
But also making the wine. You're the winemaker,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I grow and make the wine, so
okay.
It's fun.
So let's talk. We're going to get back to some of the Cardinal Point stuff specifically mm-hmm. as well. I mean, mm-hmm. there'll be good examples along the way. But this kind of explosion in growth, we talked mm-hmm. about back in 80, what, there were six, and now there are 106 or seven. Or,
uh-huh.
What are some of the factors that have allowed that to happen? What about Central Virginia, this area makes it suitable, and why has this sort of exploded in popularity and success, et cetera? What would we attribute that to?
Well, it's tough to nail down a single factor. So, but there are certainly things you can look at. I mean, just the general popularity of wine has been rising through the years. Right now, wine is the preferred alcohol beverage choice.
If you look at the alcohol industry, it's beer has really been on decline for a while, hasn't it?
And it just wine just overtook beer.
It did. Wow.
So
which is in the U.S. we're talking
about. U.S.
Yeah.
Which is I don't think a lot of Virginia's going out of the country now. Now there are some. I know about people that have taken some wine over to Italy and had favorable response, but that's part of it. The there's general interest in there's a lot of romanticizing about the wine industry, and it sort of lends itself to people who want to do it as a second career. Or
it does, Sev. I mean, you were telling me you talked about your dad and wanting to own a farm, and then I mean, you hear a lot of people would love to retire, get that farm, grow some grapes, make some wine. It has a very glamorous, of course, it's a lot of work that gets to that glamorous dream. But
that's the thing. Whenever people start bringing that up, I just try to get them, back and rooted and realize that it is very hard work. And if you're not, if you're not extremely wealthy, you're going to have to put a lot of sweat equity in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what a lot of people like, and that's what draws a lot of people. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's okay. I'm just saying we're talking to Tim Gorman from Cardinal Point Vineyard. We're going to survey the scene of Virginia wines and some national issues and interests as well. If there's a particular question you have about wine, maybe you won't even want to pick out a bottle for dinner tonight. We've got the expert here sitting in the studio, 979-0919 or 1-877-967-6762. I'm Pete Ronayne, sitting in for the vacationing Rick Moore. So we're talking now about some factors. Obviously, there's no one silver bullet, but that have led to this very explosive growth, but also popularity. I mean, people are coming to this area to taste the wines. I mean, the good quality product is being produced. So talk a little bit more about some things we would point to understand how this has come about.
Well, I think the biggest factor in my mind has been the state support that we've received. Virginia was very proactive in realizing this industry, this wine industry, had great potential, and they went and got expert extension agents. We have a state viticulturist, which is a grape specialist,
mm-hmm.
who is world-renowned, as well as a state enologist, which is a winemaker. Who is literally written the book on wine chemistry. These guys travel extensively around the world speaking at symposiums, and yet they're available for, me.
Yeah.
to get on the phone and on a first name basis.
So they're on the state payroll, and they're a resource that all the area growers and producers.
They're run through Virginia Tech as part of the extension program. And that really helped. And then also this Farm Winery Act, which I talked about, I mentioned briefly, that was in 1980 that was enacted, and that allows Virginia farm wineries to compete easier by allowing us to be on all three tiers of the alcohol system.
And so it's a distribution issue, which has hit a bump on the road, correct?
That's true. What's basically, as the Virginia farm winery, the three tiers are: you're either a producer, a distributor, or a retailer.
Mm-hmm.
A Virginia farm winery can be all three. What has happened recently?
You were talking about state support.
Yeah.
That act was one of those forward thinking,
exactly.
Sort of planting the seeds to say, all right, they're just getting off their ground.
Right.
Let's make it a little bit easier for mm-hmm. these startups to compete. We as a state have an interest in fostering this.
Correct.
And so that Virginia Wineries Act gave you that latitude to be both producer, wholesaler, mm-hmm. and outlet. Right.
It's, it's like a nursery is getting things going. You can imagine a distributor who's selling Kendall Jackson bringing in, I don't know what they, 100,000 cases a year is not going to be too interested in my 200 cases of Chardonnay as mm-hmm. well. Not to say that they're not, but it's harder to get that interest as an unknown. So, and allowing us to self-distribute it's a big deal and about getting the wine out.
Okay, and we're going to come back to what's being talked about now.
Okay.
Some other factors. So, basically sort of a greenhouse approach where the state lent a hand
yes.
to promote this local industry.
That's right.
What else would you point to?
I'd point to travel. The majority, I would say, of most wine sold in Virginia, the majority of Virginia wineries are selling most of their wine right out their front door,
mm-hmm.
and that's from visitors coming in. And they just heard an amazing statistic that 1 in 3 visitors from out of state go to visit a Virginia winery on their on their trip here. I mean, 1 in 3, that's amazing.
That is amazing.
You know, and so we get a lot of that. In the summer months at Cardinal Point, we're, I estimate, you know, it's not scientific, but that half the people coming in are from out of state.
That is incredible.
It's really cool.
Yeah, and especially when you think about, you know, not a knock on Nels, but it's out of the way. I mean, you have to make an effort to head out there. It's a destination point for people.
It's true, but you know, what's interesting is the wine industry sort of has, we do end up in these very picturesque settings.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's because of that whole site selection that I talked about. You sort of have to be in these rolling hills. You need you need elevation and mountains kind of nearby, actually, to make a good crop. I know some people would argue with that, but
well, let's talk about that in just a second. It's 11:16. You're listening to the Wake Up Call. Pete Ronayne sitting in for Rick Moore. Today's programming on WNRN is being brought to you with the support of Blue Ridge Graphics at the corner of Meade Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville, providing custom T-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746. So Virginia then has some built-in advantage, let's say Central Virginia, because of the geography and topography. Is that something that we're taking advantage of?
Yeah. If you looked at a map of Virginia orchards in, say, 1900, turn of the century, this is a big apple peach-producing state.
Mm-hmm.
Still relatively is compared to other East Coast states, but it's not it's not what it used to be. But if you had put a little pinpoint where all those orchards were, they'd pretty much run up and down the Blue Ridge. And that's because there's this phenomenon called heat inversion. Mm-hmm. And on spring nights, where we're coming up to pretty soon,
right?
You know, you've had a warm day and the buds have broken on your vines or your apple trees or your peach trees. At night, it can get very cool. And if it gets below basically, say, 31 degrees Fahrenheit, you'll lose your crop.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are in an area where you're actually, it sounds counterintuitive, because we think of, as you go up in elevation, it gets colder.
It's colder on a mountain night.
Right. So, but okay. on a still frost night that you get in the spring, the warm air actually starts coming up the hill. The cold air rushes down because it's denser and heavier.
Right.
So if you take advantage of this sort of topography, and it protects your vines and protects your crop. Cardinal Point is we have that protection to a certain degree, but we also rely on wind machines, which blow the warm air it's just only about 40, 50 feet off the ground,
mm-hmm.
and blows it back down over the vines when we're severely strained.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I've lost. This is why this isn't a career for the
like
meek.
Faint of heart. Yeah.
Faint of heart is that, you know, I lost $40,000 in one night, and I watched it, you know, at 3 a.m.
The precious resource just literally dying on the vine,
it's
right?
It's true. It can be very depressing.
now, just to jump back, mm-hmm. for those who are interested, because mm-hmm. You've gone through this firsthand,
mm-hmm.
what is the startup time? You know, if I decide, hey, you know what, I've got some great, you know, terroir, is that the word we want to use for?
That's right? Sure. Very good.
And sure. I've got the topography in this little corner. I want to plant some grapes. Mm-hmm. What are we talking about time of planting until when I have viable fruit for wine?
Right. Okay. Assuming you can get the plant products in, let's just assume and everything, mm-hmm. and let's just say you know what you're doing. it's going to take about 3 years from the time it goes in until you get your first crop. That is 3 growing seasons. So if you put it in the spring, we're only mm-hmm. talking about 2.5 years before you'll get your first crop. Now, don't expect a lot out of that first crop.
Mm-hmm. And why is that? Why?
It's because the vines are younger, and they really don't get to full production between the years. It takes about 5 to 7 growing seasons.
Mm-hmm.
You can sort of catalyze that with if you put in irrigation. A lot of people are putting in irrigation. It does it makes the vines produce sooner.
So you speed that along a little. Things we can do to...
Yeah, it's an added expense, though, so I don't know that it pays for itself if you've got the time. If you don't have time, you can actually get a crop in your second year that's pretty good with irrigation.
All right, we're talking to Tim Gorman from Cardinal Point Vineyard. More in just a second. If you've got a question for Tim about anything about wine, he's sitting here waiting for it. 979-0919, 1-877-967-6762.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
This week in The Hook, how about windmills as an alternative to our oil addiction? Read about a proposed wind farm for Highland County and the controversy it's generating. Also, a review of the new flick V for Vendetta, an update on the I-81 rail project, and a shakeup in local TV news. That's all this week in The Hook. And support for NRN today is also coming from Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, now featuring state-of-the-art travel gear from Eagle Creek. And if your travel gear is taking you somewhere warm, Blue Ridge has sandals from Teva and Reef, shorts from the North Face, and warm weather pants and shirts from the North Face and Ex Officio. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is in the Barracks Road Shopping Center, Charlottesville, the Mountain Inn at Wintergreen, and at BRMS.com. We're talking to Tim Gorman. We actually have the phone ringing out here. It looks like we're going to get a call in just a second and see what they are all about. Let's see here if I can figure out our phone technology here. Caller, are you there? Apparently not. It was a good try, though. All right, well, let's keep going with our conversation. 979-0919 is the number. And caller, please give us a whirl again if you were there. Let's see here. What's working well in Virginia wines? I mean, not all topography is conducive to all grapes, I assume. And it's sort of a learning process to figure out, you know, what's going to be the signature grape or two in this area. Is that fair to say?
Oh, it's totally fair. And, we're competing with areas that have 100, 300, 4,000 years of experience with this. It's to pick out, and I think what you're asking about is like which varieties are best suited to Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
We definitely hedge our bets here in Virginia, which is I think a pretty cool thing. If you go to a typical winery, there's probably going to have around 7 to 10 different bottles, and maybe that makes up say 7 different varieties, different styles of wine. And what we're doing is we're sort of hedging our bets, as anybody who lives here knows. The seasons rarely repeat themselves like the previous one. Yeah, the summer, summers can be very hot and dry, and we can have wet summers and cool summers.
And let's keep with that. We've got a couple of calls, so
sure.
Let's get them on. Let's try that again. So let's see. We'll go with. Caller, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Is this Lori?
Yes, it is.
Lori, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Thanks for calling this morning.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
Go right ahead.
Well, I'd like for Tim to explain the verbiage that's on the bottle of wine that says table wine. So I'd like for him to explain to the general public what that actually means.
Great question. Can you actually drink that someplace else besides at the table? I think. All right, go ahead.
And also the fact that it says in this region it has the Monticello on it.
Okay.
A lot of people are thinking that there is a Monticello winery.
Good points.
For him to explain what the Monticello means too.
Super. Thanks for the call.
You're quite welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Those are great questions, and I'll back up a bit and explain that this wine industry is highly regulated, and everything's regulated, including what goes on our labels. So, in regard to table wine, what that means is, you can ask my sister. She's an attorney, and I do the labels. I sort of put the graphics together, and we have to submit every single label that for each new bottle that we do.
So I walk in and it says table wine. What's that saying to me?
Exactly. What it's saying is that it is a non-vintage varietal wine, or maybe not a varietal wine, but it's non-vintage. It is less than 14% alcohol.
So non-vintage for the layperson means what?
There's no date on it.
Okay.
So, the wines coming out now are 2005s. That's a vintage.
Okay, so no Born on dating. It's just
no Born on. Okay. Yes, and I'm trying to actually rack my brain to think whether if you have a varietal name on it, say Chardonnay, mm-hmm. I believe if it's non-vintage, you have to put the table wine. But it's a no. Actually, I think I got that backwards. If it's a proprietary name. Mm-hmm. Say Sweet Afton. Afton mm-hmm. Mountain makes it. Right. Sweet Afton. If you're not putting any varieties on there, you just put table wine.
Okay.
And that signifies that it's below 14%.
All right.
And not much else. And the question I always have is, well, why do we have to do that? And it's not significant. The Monticello on a lot of the labels around here.
And then hang on, Tina. We'll be right with you.
Is that signifies that it was that the grapes, 95% of the grapes in that bottle came from the Monticello region, which is the Monticello Appellation, I should say, which is an area that's I guess it's all of Albemarle, it's a little of Orange, it's a little of Nelson, and
it's a broader, it's a cool sounding, but it's just a broader geographic designation.
It's very similar to the Appellation Controlé system that
like
they have in France,
Rhone Valley or something like
very
that.
Very similar.
Okay.
And so on ours we put Monticello AVA, which AVA stands for American Viticulture Area.
Okay, great. Great, excellent. Let's see. Tina, are you there?
Yeah.
Thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Well, we were having this discussion last night, me and some of my friends, and we know what legs are on red wine. Like, you know, if you twirl your glass and you look like a professional and stands up along the glass. But what exactly are they, and why are they good?
Okay, thanks for the call, Tina.
Huh?
That's a good question, too. The last time I was it was in a technical discussion that where legs came up, the wine powers that were speaking at this thing, and these were some uh-huh. high-powered enologists, they actually say that legs are no indication whatsoever of the quality of a wine.
Even so this is a myth that's evolved time, the way it sort of clings to the glass or whatever?
Exactly. You know, just for people that might not know what we're talking about, it's when you have a glass of wine and you swirl it
Let's do that right now. Here we go.
I meant to bring some in. Yeah. Wake up. So you swirl the wine a little, and what happens is they sort of drain in streams down the side of the glass after you've stopped, after mm-hmm. you know it's coming down from the rim. And I think it does, it shows a sort of, I think it's indicative of the body in the wine and potentially the amount of sugar mm-hmm. The residual sugar that might be in the wine.
But those two things in and of themselves are not good or bad or better or worse.
No,
So it's a characteristic, but it's not a quality
per se. I don't, after going to that, I stopped doing it. I used to do it all the time. but now I don't know what to really tell you.
And
Tina.
That's good. But that's a great question.
And, it is a great question.
Keep them coming. 979-0919. Give a shout out to Tim Gorman from Cardinal Point Vineyard. Also, if you're further out in the listening area, 1-877-967-6762. Pete Ronayne sitting in for the vacationing Rick Moore. Earlier, I cut you off so we could get to the callers because they were patiently waiting. We were talking about grapes that do really well here in Virginia.
Okay.
What are some of those, and what doesn't do so well? What have we learned over time? For you know, everybody wants a big bad Cabernet Sauvignon, whatever,
right.
But maybe that doesn't work well here. Whereas, you know, I travel around to some vineyards. I was at a couple yesterday. I was mentioning Viognier seems to do well in Virginia. What's going on with that? And what are some others that you would point to?
Well, currently in the whites, Viognier is sort of the leading variety that everybody's saying we should bet our industry on. Now don't write that in stone because we said that about Chardonnay and. That's kind of overplanted now. If you're going to plant a vineyard, I think I'd stay away from Chardonnay because there's just too much of it in the state.
Was that a result, just to jump in for a second, mm-hmm. of that was so popular, right? It was
exactly.
the quintessential mm-hmm. American wine.
Fun to say.
And that's what it was?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's this phenomenon out there in consumers and where it's kind of old now, but they say ABC and that means anything but Chardonnay or anything but Cabernet. And they just want to try other stuff. Chardonnay, you see it. It's still, I believe it's still the most popular variety in wine, but there's so much Chardonnay from other places in the world that it gets pretty tough for Virginia to, to compete. Not that we don't. I think we make great Chardonnay, and I'd love to see more marketing specifically for it.
What else stands out for you as wines that, grapes that are particularly suited to growing here in our climate?
Like I say, Viognier and the whites. In the reds, we're looking at Cabernet Franc. That seems to be the bet that everybody's going. Mm-hmm. I believe that. It does vary from year to year. I was talking about we have different years every year, and some years our early season grapes that we pick early are better than the late season, and then vice versa the next year. So having different grapes out there and spreading your bet can means that you've got a good saleable product in the winery.
Yeah. And what are you guys betting on? Are you into the Cabernet Franc?
We've got a lot of Cabernet Franc. I'd say Petit Verdot as a red grape is what I'm really excited about, and that's what I'm sort of trying to plant up now. Mm-hmm. In the whites, there's also a French-American hybrid called Traminette, which is sort of very similar to Gewürztraminer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's making some really nice wines.
Interesting. And you can make a wine from that on its own, or do you blend that? Or
you can make it on its own. Blending is, personally, I blend it, but it can be on its own. But blends are also the direction that the wine industry as a whole is going to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because a lot of people say, you know, any one variety on its own ain't going to hold it. It can always be improved with a little tweaking. And it also makes more unique wines.
So we'll see that not just from Virginia wines, but across winemakers.
Definitely.
Blend approach.
Definitely, yeah.
Interesting. Great. 979-0919 is the number to call if you want to give a question to Tim Gorman from Cardinal Point Vineyard. I want to let you know that today's programming on WNRN is brought to you by Five Guys Burgers and Fries, Seville Reader's Choice for Burgers, and rated by Zagat Restaurant Survey for 4 years running. Five Guys serves America's standard, fresh, and handmade from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. and open until 10 Friday and Saturday. Five Guys Burgers and Fries, behind the fountain in the Barracks Road Shopping Center, now open in the Hollymead Town Center, and coming soon to the Downtown Mall, Charlottesville. 975-GUYS. All right, we're here talking with Tim Gorman from Cardinal Point Vineyard and Winery. Cardinal Point Vineyard and Winery, I want to get this right.
That's exactly right.
All right.
And I'd like to just put in a special thanks to Five Guys for coming to the area. I love Five Guys.
All right, so we've got some mutual support here.
Very good.
That could be an interesting event. What wines to pair with your Five Guys?
We got a new wine called Rockfish Red that's great with a Five Guys burger.
Thanks for slipping that in. That's
very good. I can get something.
Anytime we can cross promote, we'll do that. All right, let me ask you. Sort of, we'll go on a different track. The movie Sideways.
Yeah.
Super. Who would have thought? Right. It comes from out of the blue.
Mm-hmm.
A small movie about sort of wine of all things, which you would think might appeal to a more narrow audience, but it has this big implications. And I saw an article. This was probably a year ago at this mm-hmm. point, about the impact of that movie
mm-hmm.
on Merlot sales versus mm-hmm. Pinot Noir sales. What do you think of that movie, and what are some lessons learned or some of your takeaway? What's important about that?
Well, I like the movie a lot. However, I thought it was about the most depressing comedy I'd ever seen. I mean, I was really sure that I forget the names of the character, but the...
they weren't happy gentlemen.
The Giamatti guy, I thought he was going to kill himself. Yeah, I was like, oh, God, this is terrible. I've been laughing. My other quick thing about the movie before I tell you specifically in my business, I'm sitting there watching it in a theater downtown, and I apologize for the people next to me, but it was a packed house, and everybody's laughing through it and everything, and they come to a scene where the two guys, the people who haven't seen the movie, these two guys basically are going around to wineries.
Yeah, in California.
They pull into the place where he does the pour bucket and everything, the really touristy.
He gets all upset and takes it.
They're pulling in there, and he goes, oh, no, we're not going to Frass Valley, are we? Well, when they say that, I just bust a gut laughing, because in the vineyard, when a moth or a worm starts digging through your grape, they'll eat the inside of the grape out. And mm-hmm. when they eat, then they have remnants that come out the other end.
Right.
They're pooping in the grape, and it's called frass. And so they go Frass Valley, and I just guffaw.
So
really
insider
laughed.
Joke.
It was so
99%
insider.
Of us had no idea.
So now you can impress your friends.
Yeah. I can see a little director's commentary with Tim Gorman kind of. Yeah.
Exactly.
So other stuff about that movie.
Okay. So even before I saw it, when I heard that this movie was coming out, I was like, this sounds perfect, because one of the things it does is it shows people that you can do this. I mean, it's not a snobby sort of undertaking to go visit wineries, and it shows. And basically, you do just what they you walk in. every winery has either complimentary tastings or for a very low fee. You can taste their wines and try them. And you know, around here, we've got so many great wineries, and they're all different and they're unique. And, you know, you don't have to buy. I mean, we all want you to. but you don't have to, and we're hoping that you're going to try something that you like.
And it seems like there's been a good effort, and I'm not, maybe that movie was part of it unintentionally, but to kind of demystify wine and democratize wine.
Sure.
That it's, you don't have to necessarily know. It's what you like, right?
Exactly.
If you like the $10 wine versus the $45, whatever, it's what you like.
Yeah, and the part, you know, since we do most of our sales, and most of our wineries do right out the door, and we're letting you taste it up front, I also don't feel like we're trying to pull anything over anybody's eyes. Rusty came in during a break and said something about how he thinks a lot of Virginia wines have this sort of, I think he said, a dirty taste or something.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I don't really know what he's talking about. I don't agree. But the thing is you can go and taste that and find the wines that you like.
Right.
And then you've got them. And with this resource, you know, all the listeners here need to be getting out to their local wineries.
Absolutely. We are spoiled in this area.
It's true.
There's no doubt
about it.
Now, let's talk about pricing for a second, because it's related to this very subjective part of wine.
Uh-huh.
If you've got a question for Tim about wine in general, a wine in particular, anything, 979-0919 or 1-877-967-6762. This is the Wake Up Call. I'm Pete Ronayne, sitting in for the vacationing Rick Moore. This is a big question. You can take it any way you want. What do you look for with wine pricing? Because you walk, let's say you're kind of just getting into it. You find a couple of things that you like.
Uh-huh.
You even just walk into Harris Teeter, and there's just an unbelievable range of prices for what is observably the same kind of wine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this Merlot versus that one, this Sauvignon Blanc versus that one. What goes into pricing? And second question, this is long-winded. How competitive can Virginia be, pricing-wise? What are your challenges in terms of price?
Great questions. And the good news is for the consumers, it's a great time to be a wine drinker. Technology has really boosted the minimum quality that you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
So those, you know, the question to me, I could also put back to you is like, how on earth is Yellowtail sold at $5.99 a bottle?
It's coming from Australia.
Exactly.
Okay.
Try
the airfare.
Try to ship a T-shirt to Australia. You know, ground. I don't know. Put it on a dolphin's back, and you couldn't get it there for $5.
Yeah.
And they're
so is that a volume thing? I mean,
it's a totally volume thing, and also the Australians, which I could talk. You could talk a long time just about their industry. It's amazing. They set out to conquer the wine world as an industry, and they've almost done it. Fortunately, you know, each winery is making their own wine that is around the world. We're sort of like, especially in Virginia, we're like microbrewers sort of, you know, and while people might like Budweiser or Miller, they like, you know, getting some difference in their wine, and people don't just like to drink the same thing all the time. But in Australia, they've figured out how to farm in deserts. They got their labor way down. They spend, for example, 10 man hours. That includes people on tractors driving through 10 man hours per acre in Australia. In Virginia, for me, I've estimated it between 120 and 150 per year. You know, so this 10 man hours per year versus, I mean, any way you pay it, sweat, you know, out of your hide or whatever.
Well, if you can get that efficiency and the scale they have, it starts to get us to the $5.99 Yellowtail.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And they, you know, and they figured it out. Now getting back to your original question, where, you know, price, there is a lot, you know, mystifying to a consumer who walks in and goes, well, why is this one $8? Why is this Merlot $8? Why is this one $20? Are they better? And the answer, quite honestly, can sometimes be no, that $8 is better than that $20.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way, you know, it's like me saying which CD is better. You know, they're different artists.
And that subjectivity comes in again.
Exactly.
Which sort of not confuses it, but makes the question a bit more complex.
Exactly. And, you know, I can tell you that there's, for example, in Virginia, there's just certain expenses that we are, that's our challenge, because we're going to have to compete globally. Mm-hmm. And our challenge is that we are it's heavy manual labor. That is you've got to have men pruning and men and women and harvesting, and mm-hmm. we are getting into more mechanical harvesting, but that's just one one little feature. And
so labor costs alone make it harder for you to compete on price alone. We're not talking
right,
about quality.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's other. I mean, just bottles. The bottle alone. People. I mean, I look at Yellowtail and I'm going, how are they buying these? My bottles cost minimum 50 cents a piece. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just for the vessel that's holding it.
Yeah.
The corks, if you get natural cork, and people may be wondering, you know, what's going on with corks, but a really good natural cork is almost 50 cents a piece now.
Yeah.
You know, it costs as much as a bottle.
And so you have to do that math for the labor intensity.
Right.
And then just some of your built-in costs.
Right.
But how do you decide? This is a good question.
Yeah,
I'm sure a lot of listeners notice this. And if there are other things you want to talk about, 979-0919, Tim Gorman here from Cardinal Point Vineyard.
Mm-hmm.
The natural cork thing, that plasticky-looking synthetic thing, and screw caps are on quality wines now. I mean, which we consistently associate with, you know, lame stuff that you want to drink out of a brown paper bag.
Right.
What's going on with those three? Is that any indicator? Where's it going to go?
Well, it's sort of a two-sided issue. Corks can generate this or leave this thing in wine called cork taint. And it's from a mold that's growing in the cork that the cork actually picks up from the ground.
So you're talking about that, the natural cork that...
It's when you get a wine that people call corky, mm-hmm. it has a aroma and you could say taste, but it's mostly aroma of wet cardboard.
Mm-hmm.
And say that's when you can go to your maitre d' and go,
this is not
away.
Right. Yeah.
Cork, when you use natural cork, you're risking that taint. The cork industry is really working hard to try to eliminate that problem. One way you can eliminate the problem, and also the problem is that the cork is a natural product. It mm-hmm. comes from the bark surrounding these trees, mostly in Portugal, mm-hmm. a little bit in Spain. And there's only a finite number of these trees. And as we mentioned, you know, there's a wine boom.
Mm-hmm.
And so corks are getting more expensive just because it's supply and demand.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to find alternatives. And the industry came up with these plastic corks.
Mm-hmm.
And what's good about the plastic corks is they preserve all that the performance art of opening a bottle at a table, and you go through the whole thing. But they're much less expensive. They're about 10 cents a piece for those corks. But those things got a lot of technology in them. Mm-hmm. They're called tech corks now, sort of like tech fabric, and everything, So they're made by Patagonia now.
Pick them up at Blue Ridge Mountain Sports.
Yeah, and another great store. And anyway,
So they're cheaper?
They're cheaper, and they actually...
Equally effective or more effective?
No, actually, here's the rub on them, is they're great for short-lived wines that you're going to have, that you're going to drink right away or maybe up to 3 years.
Okay.
But it turns out that if you look, microscopically at the surface of a natural cork, it's got thousands and millions of scales,
mm-hmm.
okay? And each one of those scales form next to the glass and make this incredibly good seal. If you look at a plastic, no matter how good they are, and you get really close, it's sort of almost grainy,
mm-hmm.
and it allows for gas transfer, and basically you can get oxidation.
So over time, air can get in there.
So this is where screw caps come in.
Yeah.
Screw caps are a perfect seal, and you're not going to have... Basically, what happens with the screw caps, what you put in is what's going to come out.
Yeah.
And it winemakers are having to, relearn or re-guess when they should put wine into bottle, because especially with my reds, I haven't used screw caps yet, but I've sat in on these seminars talking about closures, and, I put my reds in maybe a little young, knowing that they're going to evolve, and I'm not so sure what's going to happen when I use a screw cap. I am personally a fan, though. I tasted some Sauvignon Blanc from New Zealand,
mm-hmm.
that was on the same bottling line, same exact wine. They use a natural cork, a synthetic cork, and a screw cap. This is, I think it was about, say, a year later after the bottling. And tasted these things, and you wouldn't believe how much better the screw cap was.
Wow,
and that's the
incredible.
Type of wine that really needs to have that sort of freshness, that aromatic component mm-hmm. held in, and that's what screw caps will really help.
So if you walk in the store and you see the screw cap, don't mm-hmm. be dissuaded. It actually could be.
Yeah.
I mean, so it depends. But
And I know, because a lot of my customers are like, don't ever go to the screw cap, and
because it's
agree.
The aesthetic of it, right?
Exactly.
It's
sort of, and, you know, the whole, you know, brown bag type thing.
Yeah.
And, I don't want to upset any customers, but, you know, on the other hand, I'm like, this is pretty cool. Now, what's neat about screw caps is there's a next generation that's going to hide the fact that it looks like that it's a screw cap from the outside. It's going to have sort of a second sleeve, so it looks just like the other bottles.
So happy medium. Very,
yeah, so, but
very
I think
cool.
People will be piercing their caps with corkscrews. But,
give us a call if you got a question for the self-described wine nerd, but we'll call him the wine guru extraordinaire, Tim Gorman, 979-0919 or 1-877-977-6762.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
Hello, Pete Ronayne sitting in for Rick Moore this morning. The Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Sunny today with a high of 45 to 50, partly cloudy tonight with lows in the upper 20s, and partly cloudy tomorrow with a high of 45 to 50. Right now in the valley, it's clear skies throughout our listening area. 44 in the valley, 40 in Lynchburg, and in Charlottesville, 45 degrees here at WNRN. Additional support today is also coming from 456.com. If you have a project but not the time, there's a simple way to find a contractor. From kitchen and bathroom remodeling, house painting, to decks and siding, it's 456.com. Immediate, no obligation estimates, available anytime. That's the number 4, the number 5, and the word fix. .com. We're joined in the studio here for Wake Up Call by Tim Gorman from Cardinal Point Vineyard and Winery, covering a lot of ground. And if there's something that we're leaving out that you want to hear about, give us a ring, 979-0919. What's new for wine in this area? What are some things that customers, drinkers might be interested in hearing about?
There's plenty going on, and I'm sure I'm not going to touch on everything, so I apologize ahead of time. But I guess the coolest new thing is the Vivino opening up on the downtown mall. I guess that's new, but the Virginia Wine Bar.
If you haven't been down there for a while, you might mm-hmm. not have noticed it. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's near the Nook there,
mm-hmm.
and it's a Virginia wine bar. You can go in and taste flights of Virginia wine. So, you know, for the uninitiated, it's a great way to, in one real quick mm-hmm. trip, get a good taste of. Yeah, I think you can get a Cabernet Franc tasting and taste. The thing about Cabernet Franc, I didn't touch on it earlier, but it lends itself to lots of different styles
mm-hmm.
of winemaking and like a lot of varieties. But anyway, you can go to Vivino, taste those. You can buy bottles there. It's, it's pretty fun, and I can't wait for the summer when they'll have, you know, the outdoor tables.
Oh, that'd be great. And it was a super idea and I assume that there's support for that. From around the area, it's a perfect match.
Yeah, you know, they're picking up our wine. The winemakers from all the wineries around go in on. Well, we each get a Thursday every once in a while to go in and mm-hmm. Talk about our product.
Meet the winemaker.
Exactly.
And, cool.
Yeah, and let's see. There's a new winery going in down in North Garden. There's a new one that's going to pop up in Lovingston. I believe they're going to open this summer. There's a winery out my way between, mm-hmm. King Family and Afton, right on 250. There's one that's going to pop up, I believe, this fall.
God, that's incredible. I mean, that explosive growth
it's just
continuing.
Pop, pop, pop.
You hear
it all the time.
That is amazing. It's just amazing.
And, you know, people are always like, well, is that good for you? And, mm-hmm. and frankly, it is that little working with Veritas and Afton Mountain and Afton,
mm-hmm.
we now we're a destination, and it also it gives credence to the concept that we are a significant wine area, and, mm-hmm. and it's no longer just like that's cute Virginia
just
has wine,
just a quaint Virginia
right.
wine
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, yeah. So that's neat. Let's see. There's lots of renovation going on, and locally the Monticello Wine Festival, which is the Monticello Trail, basically that Monticello AVA we talked about, the folks mm-hmm. that are in that have a wine festival every year and has been at the Boar's Head the first weekend mm-hmm. in October. That's being changed. That's, I believe it's moving. Actually, I'm not sure if it's moving out to Foxfield or if it's going to the downtown mall.
Oh, interesting.
But it's moving, and people should keep their eyes out for that.
So a lot of events and developments that keep this the area wine really, really growing and moving forward.
All the time.
Very cool. Give us a ring, 979-0919, if you have a question about wine. I've got a wine enjoyment question. You've probably seen this guy on PBS. They sort of been trotting him out around the fundraiser time, and he talks about how to enjoy wine and what. Have you seen this guy?
I don't watch the fundraisers.
hey, we've got one coming up. You better be listening.
Hey, I listen to fundraisers.
Oh, okay, that's different. But he was talking about all different things about enjoying wine, and he was, certainly from his perspective, he was countering what he considered to be some myths or misconceptions. Uh-huh. So two or three things I want to raise. One was, he said, we generally enjoy our wines drink our wines at the wrong temperatures. Mm-hmm. That we drink our white wine too cold, mm-hmm, and our red wine too warm. Mm-hmm. All right. Those two things to talk about. The second thing he said, if you have a party, all right, let's say you have a party out at Cardinal Point, you have, mm-hmm, some friends come in, they have all sorts of wine open, and then you have a lot of stuff left over, mm-hmm, and you're not going to drink it in the next couple of days. He said that you can freeze it. You can freeze the wine. And so what do you think about that? A couple of things. Do we drink our temperature serving wine? And then what about this idea? He said, you know, pour it into something else, freeze it, and then he said it'll be fine. I'm sensing from your reaction that
I'll hit the freeze one first. I didn't know that. So and I haven't tried that.
But does that sound counterintuitive given your knowledge of the chemistry of wine, et cetera?
I don't know. I know that, you know, I've frozen beer so by accident so many times and it doesn't taste good afterwards. Yeah, and yeah. I've never frozen. Well, I have frozen wine by accident, but I couldn't, you know, I think we like threw it out.
You just assumed it would be bad. And so,
yeah.
All right. Well, then experiment for you to go back.
I don't know. I know.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
And
there you go, students. Please try this at home. But the temperature is absolutely correct. I mean, our refrigerators are there to preserve food, not to, mm-hmm, make wine the perfect serving temperature. So when you're putting your white wine in, it is too cold. You kind of want it to be up, I don't know, 40, 45. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you like it cold, that's fine.
Right.
There's no rules, mm-hmm, so don't listen to that. And then with red wine, yeah, they always said room temperature. But, I mean, room temperature in Europe, especially old Europe,
That's exactly what he said. Our rooms were not 75 degrees at the time.
Right.
And so I think his little rule of thumb was, your white wine, take it out of the fridge, mm-hmm, for 15 minutes.
That's great. Yeah.
And your red wine, actually put it in the fridge, mm-hmm, for 15 minutes.
I think that red wines, especially, I mean, in the summer, can be extremely refreshing if they're, mm-hmm, cooler. So,
yeah.
You know, if it's the right type. So, you know, people that get freaked out about cooling down reds, go ahead, try it. It's not going to kill you.
So what kind of questions do you get? What sort of trends? When you have a, you know, tremendous number of visitors, mm-hmm, coming out, kind of it's almost the Nelson County Wine Trail, mm-hmm, really.
Yes, sir.
And so you probably have high volume on the weekends.
Yeah.
What are the most common questions, concerns? Is there a theme that you sort of encounter from customers interested in wine?
They kind of want to know how I got into it, mm-hmm, like I've already explained. Mostly they want to know dollar questions, like how much does this cost? How much does that cost? So,
yeah.
I mean, for example, how much does a barrel cost? Well, a barrel cost now, if it's French oak, it's over $800
a barrel. You're talking about the barrels you would use to age the wine.
That's 25 cases. You know, that's also adding to that expense I was talking about.
Yeah.
They like to know, you know, what do the tanks cost? We have big metal tanks.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of production. People are interested
in questions.
The how.
Yeah. And, you know, but by and large, it's, you know, how the heck did you get in this business? So, you know,
Well, it is fascinating. And I think, as you mentioned early on with your dad, mm-hmm, I think a lot of people do find it glamorous and very, mm-hmm, attractive. Even if they don't want to do it, they think, wow, it's cool. Because, mm-hmm, I mean, if you get out to Cardinal Point or Veritas, it's beautiful locations. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, just the geography is gorgeous. Add to that some wine,
right?
And I mean,
right,
that's pretty sweet.
You know, and they're always like, well, you know, if you don't sell it, you're still well off. You know, you got something to look
set
to get
for
back
life.
On.
Yeah,
right.
That's right.
So,
what have you been drinking, or what's on the more national scene? Even, mm-hmm, what's out there to look for with wine? What's catching your eye?
You know, I've been drinking a lot more Spanish and Italian wines when I'm picking stuff up. Spain is really going to come on strong. It's been several years. Spain has more vineyard area planted than anywhere else.
Than anywhere else in the world?
And any other country in the world.
Really?
Yeah, that's, wow, blows my mind, too. But they... they put a, they used to have a strict limit on irrigation, which was probably a good thing, because when you don't irrigate, you're getting less per acre. There's a whole argument about whether that's right or wrong, but you know, it's a good thing from my point of view, because when they start irrigating and they get up to 6 tons per acre, that's three times the amount they'll produce, yeah. And they're already big.
Yeah.
But there's going to be some really great bargains out of Spain. You know, the South American wines are kind of, they seem to be stabilizing. The Australian wines seem to, the Australian wines almost seem to me, I don't have anything to back this up, but I think they're sort of competing with themselves now. If you look, there's a whole lot more stuff out there than Yellowtail.
There is. And, there's a ton. Yeah.
And the biggest trend, actually, and Cardinal Point's probably, we didn't mean to be in this, but there's this whole thing called critter labels, which are the major trend that lots of wines have little animals on their labels.
Like the little penguin and
the kangaroo, the butterflies, cardinals.
We're talking about just... That's right, you do have a critter label, don't
we? Yeah, but ours isn't cute. He looks kind of angry.
The angry cardinal.
What's going on?
So is this purely a marketing thing? Is this just, it's cute? Because I'll tell you what, I mean, I was in a... I was at a vineyard recently, uh-huh. And it will go unnamed, but the wine was actually good. Uh-huh. It was very good, but if I had just looked at the label, mm-hmm. I'd have never even tried it.
Yeah, no, it's
because,
true.
You know, it's like a book by its cover. There are things that are just drawn to it,
right.
or not, and yeah. It makes a huge difference.
I had a good friend say when we were starting this out that, you know, I was like, I don't know how significant the label is anyway. You know, they're tasting it. But she said, you know, if you do a good job with your label, it shows that you really care that much more. You know, so it was an interesting thing to say.
Yeah.
Of course, obviously, everybody's proud of their own label. Nobody's going to think that they've got a bad label.
Yeah.
But, you know.
But more of the animals and that level to appeal to people. It seems friendly, right?
And I'm not being sexist, but what I've heard is that it's aimed at women, and women are the... They are the ones that are picking up most of the wine, and it's mostly for the grocery store wines.
Oh, interesting.
And so, you know, next time you're in the grocery store, you want to entertain the kids, take them to the wine aisle, and they can pick out all the different animals.
So one thing that you mentioned before we didn't get a chance to get into is this distribution issue.
Yeah.
We only have a couple of minutes left. That was worth getting into because it's an important issue for the industry.
Right.
You had the Virginia Wineries Act that freed you up to be both, you know, sort of producer or wholesaler.
Retailer,
do all three pieces.
Right.
Now, just for our listeners, what's the issue now?
Well, there's basically it goes back to the direct shipping, that is being able to ship directly to to consumers.
Mm-hmm.
That was challenged from out of state because it was said since Virginia wineries could do that, they that is we could ship directly to in-state consumers and out-of-state people couldn't. That got challenged against the Commerce Clause.
Mm-hmm.
We came up with a way around that, which involves getting licenses. But during the same lawsuit, a judge found that it's illegal for Virginia for wineries to be on the to be distributors as well as producers.
It's unfair.
Right. Right now it's a federal injunction, and we are. We're trying to find a way around it. The General Assembly introduced a bill that would allow a small amount, that is a finite amount, you know, we were proposing 3,000 cases, mm-hmm. be allowed to be self-distributed by any winery,
right.
Any American winery in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
Virginia wineries.
Right, but, you know, maybe who would take advantage of that? Maybe some North Carolina wineries. But the distributors block that, and I think the reason they block that is because there's pending doom on the that for them, and I think they're just trying to get their house in order. Basically, in Washington State, Costco, which is just like Sam's Club,
right,
is going to court trying to buy directly from the large producers in Washington State. And so it's going right to the whole three-tier system.
The heart of the system again.
And I think as that's not, I mean, distributors are important, and I'm not trying to knock them.
Sure.
But also, you know, I'm trying to hold our...
A lot of stakeholders and certainly the startup
right.
vineyards and wineries. We've
right.
got Brian from Seaville is trying to call in. Brian, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, go ahead.
I have a question about organic viticulture.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I think one of the biggest problems with agriculture is the increase in fertilizer use. And you've said how there's a big boom in the number of wineries and that land use is going to vineyards, which is a good thing, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like there are very few organic vineyards in Virginia. I was wondering if you personally have thought about that, and if the board that you sit in on has, if there's a kind of push for that in Virginia at all.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Ryan.
Yeah, it's a great question, and I kind of expected it earlier. It's very hard to go 100% organic in Virginia. I know there are some smaller wineries attempting it, and that's where you'd kind of have to, because you're talking about even more labor-intensive work. There is a sustainable organization. Well, I don't know how organized it is, but there's a group of growers that are working on the sustainable agriculture, and that is generally entails going to organics. The problem with, to me, what I can tell you is that most, every grower I know tries to limit the amount of chemical input they put in their vineyard for two reasons. One, they want to be good stewards of the land, but also that's a lot of expense. So they're trying to limit what's going on the vines. But that technology that we have now with our chemicals is part of the reason that this is a successful industry. We've got a lot of what we do spray, and as far as fertilizing, we do a lot of organic fertilizing, because that builds the organic matter. But it's mostly the fungal pathogens that we can't get around organically. Now, we could spray copper, but that leads to toxicity in the soil over the long run.
Another set of issues.
So what we try to do is basically keep it very benign on what we do spray, limit what we spray, and as soon as we can go organic, we will.
Great question to close with. Thanks to all of our callers and to all of you for listening to the Wake Up Call. My name is Pete Ronayne. I've been sitting in. And big thanks to Tim Gorman from Cardinal Point Vineyard and Winery out there in Afton for coming in and sharing his expertise and knowledge. Rick will be back next week. Les Temps-Perdue is up next. Stay tuned for that.